a brand new morn. This comes to pass when a child is born.
Oh, good morning, friends, and welcome now to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is December 14th, 1984. I'm Gail Malloy, and each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We're going to spend the next several minutes with Hutch, Mr. Jim Hutchison, Sr. He's best known for his work as a pioneer in mechanics of Alaskan aviation history. He was born in 1900 on February 14th. That's right, Hutch. I should remember. That's my birthday, too. I'd like to, as a bit of an introduction, read a letter that was written to James T. Hutchison, Sr. on February 28th of 1973 from Senator Ted Stevens. Dear Hutch, congratulations on your selection as Alaskan Air Carrier Mechanic of the Year. Your achievement in redesigning and manufacturing the nose wheel steering hydraulic cylinder for the Hercules added to the excellence you have demonstrated in your work virtually from the beginning of Alaskan air history. In my opinion, it makes you a strong contender for the national award. I want you to know I have written to FAA Administrator John Schaefer adding my recommendation to the numerous others from Alaskans who wish to express their appreciation for the service you have devoted to our state. We'll find out more and meet Hutch in just a few minutes. Meet a Pioneer is sponsored by Larson's Jewelers, the Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, Sophie Station, Denali Chiropractic, Interior Signs, and the Forget-Me-Not. Well, good morning, Hutch.
Morning.
And how are you doing today?
Fine.
How's the weather outside?
Cold.
Yeah. I think we've got about 29 degrees below zero right now.
Yeah.
Well, you and I, this was a pleasure to discover, are born on the same day. You're a Valentine baby. 1900. And where were you born?
Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
1900.
Your family has been in that area for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, how did you happen to leave there and come here? What happened in those years?
Well, I came up in the Army, 1919, and stationed down at Haines and at Valdez.
Now, you got in just after World War One.
Yeah, right after. I enlisted in March of 1919 and arrived in Alaska in May 1919.
How did you happen to get sent to Alaska?
Well, they had a post in William H. Sword down at Haines, and the Home Guards were there, and the Home Guards wanted to be discharged and go home. So they sent the 21st Infantry up with as a part of, and we come up on the old city of Seattle, landed on the 30th day of May,
huh.
Decoration Day. The flags were flying, a band was playing, and big deal.
Oh my, sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, before we move away from that area, you have a very unique and special photograph that was taken in 1919, a picture of the ice-free bay. Would you describe that?
Well, that was in Valdez. Yeah, that was in the winter of 1919. And one thing that brings to my mind, we had a kind of a show amongst the gang over at the post, and we were going over to Valdez to put it on for the people over there, and they put us on this icebreaker, the Algonquin. It came in, got as far as the post, and then we all got on and started for Valdez. We only got about a third of the way, and they had to come back and left us off, and next day they started cleaning out the ice. The band took them about 4.5 hours.
And that's the infamous ice-free bay. They say they doesn't get ice.
Yeah, it was full solid, clear down to the Dixon Straits, I think they call it. Dixon Entrance.
Huh. Well, I've seen the photograph. In fact, at one time in 1919 did ice out.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you met your wife there.
Yeah. She was a telephone operator at Valdez, and I was a telephone operator over at the post.
Gee whiz.
At the guardhouse. That's where the exchange was.
Now, where was she born?
Hmm?
Where was your wife born, Helen?
Nanilchik.
Nanilchik?
Oh, yeah. She's an Alaskan. Never lived outside.
Gee whiz.
Been outside several times, but never lived out there.
Okay. Now, how did you happen to come to Fairbanks, and when was that?
Oh, in 22. I got through the grapevine. I got a hold of Charlie Fowler, and a lot of the old timers here know him. And he was the manager of the ball club, and I knew they wanted some ball players up here. So I wrote to him, and he sent me some money to come on up
to be a
play ball. Yeah,
a baseball player.
Yeah.
So you were going to do that as an occupation?
Oh, yeah. No, just on the side.
Just kind of for fun. So you can.
Now, he offered me a job. You know, he said, I'll get you a job. You come on up. We'll get you a job. And then you can play ball.
And that was the main thing, though.
That was the main thing.
Well, my goodness. Okay, well, yeah. And that was in 1922 in May.
Yeah.
Well, did you play ball when you got up here?
Oh, yeah. I played ball until about, 1928, I guess, 27, 28.
What position did you play?
Short.
Huh.
Shortstop.
And what was the team?
Hmm?
What was the team?
What?
What team was it?
Fairbanks. It was Fairbanks' team.
Just the Fairbanks team. Gee whiz.
Yeah, we played in Anchorage and we played in Enana.
Huh.
Well, we had a good time.
Well, where did your other, beside playing ball, where did you work?
Worked at Sampson Hardware first. No, at the Independent Mill for a while, then the Sampson.
Now, who'd you work for at Sampson's?
Yeah, Jim Barrick.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, Jim Barrick, uh-huh.
And,
what'd you do there?
Well, I started in as a delivery boy. I delivered, and then I did a lot of the unloading of the freight and storing it and stocking shelves and putting up orders and delivering them up to the depot. And
And that's the same building that's there now?
Same building, yeah.
Uh-huh, gee.
And I went down to the FE company then, 25. I stayed to Sampson from 1922 until 1925.
Uh-huh.
Then I moved down to the FE company until 29. And in 1929, I went out on the airport in the flying business.
Okay.
Alaska Airways.
I see.
That's what started my aviation business.
Uh-huh. Now, when you moved here, you and Helen bought a house.
Yeah, bought a house in 1925.
The same house I sent a cab to this morning.
Same one. Well, I've improved it a little bit.
Uh-huh. Well, I saw a picture of it when your children were just babies, and the front of it looks the same. Yeah. Now, it's on First Avenue, but things looked differently then.
It sure did. I had some boats across the street, a few little cabins, and
well, of course, the power plant wasn't there.
No, the power plant wasn't there.
And the river was wider.
River was big, and we had a flood put in every spring, and the bad ones, some of them were real bad, you know, we'd have ice cakes right in front of the house. And they eventually built a dike out at Moose Creek and cut out the Badger Slough, which run in through Fairbanks. And, of course, then all we had was a Chena running through town, and that made it pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
We've had only that big flood since. That's the only one.
Now you moved into that house in 25, and this is 84.
Yeah.
That's almost 60 years. Wow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you went to work for, you say, the start of your aviation career. What was the, tell me about, I think it was 1924 when you met Ralph. I believe he took you on your first flight or had.
Ralph Wayne?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ralph was, and Noel were up here together, and Ralph made a trip to Wiseman, and he come down on the coke lead. Got blown over there and run out of gas in a snowstorm, I guess, and he landed the airplane on a bar and tied it down and walked 3 days and a half or so to get in, come in at, I think, Dunbar on the railroad or Nenana or somewhere. And they got Ted Young to fly out and bring the airplane back. They took a boat, really, and the three of them, Ted Young, and I think it was Dick Woods, and another guy, and they took the boat and went down and up the Cantishner to the Toklat and up the Toklat where the airplane was. They had gas and a prop. Well, they didn't need a propeller, but they needed the gas. Ed Young flew it back here in the bowl, and the lower wings were full of sand, so it didn't matter. They flew it back here, and then I was working there at Sampson, and Ralph came over and wanted me to come up and give him a hand to change the wings. I had a toolbox with some tools in, so I went up and helped him change the wings from another airplane that had no engine in, and then Noel wanted to take me for a ride.
In that plane?
Yeah, 20 minutes at 12. I'll never forget it.
20 minutes at 12 on what day?
Meantime. I don't know what day it was.
But do you remember 20 minutes at 12?
Yeah. But we flew for about 10, 15 minutes, came down, landed.
And with Noel Ween?
Yeah.
And that, was that your first flight?
Yeah, 1924.
What'd you think? What'd it feel like?
Oh, it was great. Huh. Yeah, that started it out.
Did you kind of get the...
Yeah.
You got the urge to want to fly.
Yeah, I was all ready for the business end.
Well, did you start taking lessons?
Yeah, Ralph started teaching me then.
Uh-huh.
And he got killed up in Kotzebue, of course, and then I began to gather my thoughts together about five kids I had and all this, and I better get away from the business, stay in the work in the airplane instead of flying.
So Ralph went up on some flight and crashed. Or
yeah, he was flying a Blanca diesel, had a diesel engine in it.
Uh-huh.
Packard diesel, and something went wrong. Killed three of them.
So you kind of reevaluated then?
Yeah, I kind of sit back then and kind of look at things different.
Uh-huh. Well, did you go to, you decide you're going to work on them then? Well, did you go to school, or how did you learn to do all these things?
No, you just, oh, I don't know. Watch other guys and a certain amount of ability, I expect. I don't know, and you just keep going.
You just wanted to, and you picked it up and learned how to do it. Huh.
Welding. I got into the welding end of it, you know.
Well, what was it like back then? You actually fixed planes that crashed. You repaired the wings and all. What were they made of? What kind of things did you fix them with?
Well, they were most of the airplanes were tubing. And 1025, and eventually they came to a better grade of tubing, 4130, which is chromoly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones had lots of wood in them, like wood ribs and wood spars, and they had nitrate dope, which was very flammable. My goodness, it burned so easy. And the aviation advanced, you know, when they got into butyl dope, which was more or less fire resistant. And, I don't know, the thing just kept booming along and getting better and better, you know. Better stuff, better material, better airplanes.
So you had to learn on your own as things progressed.
Had to learn all right along, you know.
Was there an FAA then, or what was the regular?
No, they weren't here then.
There wasn't any such thing then?
No FAA.
Huh.
They didn't show up until around, that was the CAA then.
Well, so you were at the very beginning of it. I mean, aviation was literally just being invented then.
Well, we just did our own thing. Nobody showed us, and nobody knew any more than we did. Really.
You wrote the book then, in other words.
Yeah.
Well, you worked at Alaska Airways then. Where was that located? Where was the outfit there?
Well, Alaska Airways was Ween's hangar. This Ben Allison bought the outfit out, you know, about Ween's, and Bennett wrote a ball. bunch down Ag region.
Now, was this Weeks Field you worked?
Yeah, Weeks Field.
Okay, now where is that exactly?
Well, it's on Cowell Street, off Cowell Street, and it's barren ground up there now. I understand they can't build anything on it.
Now that
kind of, it was originally designated as a recreational area, and as long as it was used as a recreation area, if I remember right, the dope I got on it, the city had to pay a buck to the people at the heirs, and as soon as it wasn't used as a recreation area, it would revert back to the original owners. And that's, I think, why you don't see nothing on it today. There's not a stick of wood on it. No buildings, no nothing. Because it's not a recreational area. It's not a baseball park or no racetrack.
Well, I know where that vacant lot is, but yeah, there's nothing there.
Yeah, it was a racetrack.
Now, the Arctic Bowl building, of course, across the way was one of the hangars.
That was later.
That came later.
Not later, but that was during the field. Pan American put that up.
Oh, I see. Okay. But that's the area then where you were working.
Yeah.
Of course, that was kind of out at the edge of town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that is their old hangar. Arctic Bowl is still the old hangar.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Well, now you hadn't been working there too long, and I would like to kind of go into this, one of the most exciting stories that you have been involved in that I've heard about it, and that was it all started with Noel Ween disappearing on a flight to help out the Nanook. Can you tell us the story about and start from the beginning as to why the Nanook was out there in the first place, the ship?
Yeah, well, the Nanook was a trading schooner, wood, and it had a load of freight. This guy that owned it or chartered it, I think he owned it, Swenson. And they had a load of freight, and they were taking it over to the Russians, trading with the Russians.
Now, this
up
is
in
an
Siberia.
Now, this was an outfit out of New York.
Well, yeah, their main office is in New York.
Okay.
And this Nanook went up into the Arctic, and they went up some river as far as they could go, and they unloaded their freight and took on $1 million worth of fur in the process to bring it out, and they got froze in at North Cape, Siberia, and he also had another boat, and it eventually got beached, probably still up there somewhere, and there was another boat froze in about 5 miles from the Nanook, which is the Stavropol, that's a Russian boat, and in the course of Noel Ween made the first trip in there, and he brought out a load of fur with the Hamilton, and
now this is because the ship was frozen in, so they had to fly out all the furs. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they had quite a go, I guess, to get the thing organized and get it approved between the Russian government and the Americans, you know.
Uh huh.
And they finally got permission to haul it out, and Noel made the first trip. Him and he had a mechanic, Doc Crite. And they went in there, and in the meantime, Noel sold out to Ben Ileson, bought them out, American Airlines, and some other outfits. And then Ben took on the job of hauling the fur out. And He flew the airplane himself. Nobody else would fly it. None of the other pilots wanted to fly it because it was so dang big. And
what kind of plane was it?
The Hamilton. It had a big engine and everything. It had a big engine. And he flew the airplane. Earl was with him. And they carried their skis on the airplane when they left here. And Dorbant was already in Teller, Frank Dorbant, with a Stinson.
Mm-hmm.
And they went up there and they put skis on both planes and they flew over there then. Made a first trip, or a second trip after Noel. And Noel, they come back, made a round trip fine. And the whole country over there was nothing but glare ice, very little snow. So they thought, why can't pack these big heavy skis when they could go on wheels? So they took the skis off of the both of them, put wheels on, and understand the weather got lousy up there at Teller, and they had to sit around for 4 or 5 days, and they got pretty uptight, you know, how you get anxious to go. So Dorban said, well, he was going anyway, whether Ben went or not. Well, Ben went too. Dorban went first, and Ben took off. An hour and a half, an hour later, old Dorban was back, and Ben never did come back. Never did see him again.
That was his last flight.
Yeah, he went over there and killed himself.
We'll be back with Hutch on Meet a Pioneer in just a moment after this from our sponsors. When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
He is waiting for you.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
I'm Dr. Carol Davis of the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, and I'm pleased to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. I'd like to tell you a little more about chiropractic. For instance, did you know that chiropractic is the world's largest drugless healing profession, with 17 chiropractic colleges in the United States? All have rigid admission standards and require several years of college study in the basic sciences and liberal arts. Chiropractic college is a 4-year program that demands up to 40 hours a week of in-class time, studying subjects such as anatomy, physiology, clinical sciences, and of course, techniques for adjusting the spine. Before a chiropractor graduates, she or he must serve an internship with an experienced doctor and then must meet licensing standards in all 50 states. Chiropractic care is covered by many insurance companies. If you'd like to find out more about chiropractic, call me at the Denali Chiropractic Clinic at 479-0485 or stop by 3525 College Road. And now, let's enjoy the rest of Meet a Pioneer.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linens, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. We'll be back with Jim Hutchison Sr. in just a half a minute. Alaska is still a land of pioneers, like the Binkley family, who for three generations have operated riverboats in the state of Alaska.
Running the riverboat Discovery has given our family the opportunity to show so many others just a little corner of the Alaska we love. That's also one of the reasons we're proud to be a sponsor of Meet a Pioneer. This program gives us all a chance to find out more about the fascinating history of this special place we call Alaska, and we look forward to each discovery.
Welcome. You're listening to Meet a Pioneer on KFAR Radio. I'm Gail Malloy, and we're talking with Hutch, Jim Hutchison Sr., and we'll pick up where we left off, which was 1929, and Ben Allison had gone out in bad weather, and that was the last time. Well, what happened after that, then?
Well, On the boat there, the Nanook, they had a Bob Gleason, a radio operator, was sending in reports all the time on everything, conditions over there, and Dorbant, they called him back to Fairbanks, and he come back to Fairbanks with the Stinson, and in the meantime, while Joe Crossan and we're getting ready to go over with a Waco on skis to look for Ben.
Uh-huh.
And Harold Gillum had only about 50 hours of solo time, as I understand. And he wanted to go. We had a steerman there that was available. And he took that, and they let him have it, you know. And I guess the two of them flew off, the Teller, Joe Crossan, and Gillum.
That's north of Nome.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they were going over to Siberia to look for Ben.
Now, these were friends. They were close friends.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they get to Teller, and the weather turned lousy over there. Snowed and blowed and bad, and reports from the Nanook were no good, and I was good the whole good month before they could get over there.
Huh.
And they finally got over at the Nanook, all right, both airplanes, and they continued to search, and all through December of 1929, and I understand, I think it was in January when they found the airplane. And it was due to the fact that the sun came out a little bit. And they were flying about 5 miles apart on the coast. And as I understand it, Joe spotted this shadow on the snow. So he went down, took a look, and Gillum saw him go down, and so he came over. And they looked around, and they finally went down and landed, and here's the airplane.
Now, why was it hard to spot?
Well, it was covered with snow,
and so
the wing stuck up.
Oh my word!
And caused a shadow on the snow. That's the only thing that they could see.
Huh.
So of course they knew right away, quick, that there were no hopes for those guys. So they flew back to Nanook again, and in the meantime, the Canadians, American Airlines, had hired a bunch of Canadian pilots, and they had three Fairchild 71s, and they brought them up, and they were real cold here in Fairbanks, 35, 40 below, and Swartman took off the first one and put them together in the hangar we did up there at Weeks Field, and fired it up, and he took off, and the engine quit. And he cracked it up, brand new airplane, busted all the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So they were losing one airplane right there, and he got hurt a little bit, Swartman. So the next airplane, they took off, flew around with Pat Reed, test-stopped his, and his was okay. And then they had Matt Niemann come up from Anchorage, and he flew the other one. So in the meantime, Gillum had busted his gear on the steerman over by the boat, so they wanted me to go over and fix it up.
Now, I understand Harold asked for you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they said that, I guess, on the radio or something.
They said send for Hutch. Yes, they did.
So anyway, I got to start out, and when I start out with Pat Reed, and we got lost, and behind Uniclete up in the mountains, and broke that off 5 feet of the wing. Pat Reed.
What happened? Did he try to land?
Well, we run into a snowstorm.
Uh-huh.
And Niemann, he turned around and went back to Nolato. And Pat Reed didn't know the country, and he went around a little peak and went down and landed in a little creek.
You and Pat?
Yeah, and Bill Hughes.
Oh,
three
uh-huh.
of us.
Uh-huh.
And it knocked off 5 feet of the wing.
Oh, my gosh.
We went right by a bluff.
Uh-huh.
As soon as we touched down on the snow, we was on skis. As Soon as we touched down, we went through a little overflow and then hit this bluff. It knocked 5 feet of the wing off. Well, he portacoed the engine and got it out of the water and up on a bar. There was some twigs sticking up through the snow. Well, he knew that was a bar, so he headed for that and stopped. And Bill Hughes and I, we jumped out of the airplane and run back and picked up all the pieces. It was snowing pretty hard. We, you know, I was covering the pieces pretty fast. So we run back up the creek, and, you know, running in the snow is not no fun. Huh? And it took us a little time to get all the parts and back to the airplane, drain the oil, cover the thing up, folded the wings, and took everything out of the cabin and made ready for the evening, the night. We got a bottle of rum out, by the way. And had a
you fellas were
rum.
Prepared, huh?
And a sandwich.
Mm.
That Mrs. Wiener had made us a dandy. She was Roe Borland's wife's mother. And she made us up a great big box of food. My goodness, we couldn't eat it all the time we were there. A week.
A week?
Yeah, sandwiches and a cake and biscuits and all kinds of stuff.
Now, none of you were hurt when this crashed, huh?
No, no.
No,
not when we didn't crash. No, we were in fine shape.
Okay, now, were you able to contact anyone and let your family or
anybody know? No, radios.
So for a week, nobody knew where all of you fellas were?
No, they didn't have radios in airplanes.
They didn't?
Mm-mm. No, they never come along until about the 30s, sometime in the 30s, middle 30s.
Well, were you at all worried? Did you... Were you worried? Did you think you'd...
Oh, well, sure you're worried a little bit, you know. You have to be worried. But we were sitting there, and I heard some dogs barking. They were working on the wing.
Uh-huh.
And I heard some dogs barking, and I thought, oh, boy, it ain't time yet to go out of your noodle. And sure enough, here come two dog teams. And they were from Unicleet natives, and they were trapping up there on the Ungullic River, mm-hmm. where we had landed. And I wanted to get Pat to send one back, maybe for a little, with a little message, where we were, and we'd be out if we could make it, or if we didn't, we'd be in a big pile up there. And it seems that Pat didn't want to do it. So we fixed the thing up, and a week later, we flew it out. And everything worked fine. We got down a Unicleet. Found Unicleet.
Now, when these fellows, these native men came by, you could have sent word with them that, hey, we're here.
Well,
chose not to.
We were in Unicleet before they could even got halfway home, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Been a long ways yet.
But so you and this fellow Bill Hughes, who was also a mechanic?
Mechanic, yeah.
Repaired and patched together this wing that had lost 5 feet of mm-hmm. wing. Oh, my.
But the funny part of this whole thing was that the two airplanes, the one that Pat Niemann was flying, he had Sam McCauley, who was the engine mechanic, and he had all the engine parts, new cylinders, you know, spark plugs, all kinds of goodies. And we had the airplane repair parts. We had the fabric and the dope, and wire, everything but nails. We didn't have any small nails. So when we took on, we had three gas cases with us, and we took everything out, and we very carefully took the boxes apart and saved the nails so we could nail the spar together, nail the pieces on the spar.
Oh, my word. We'll be back in just a moment.
Today's Alaskans are demanding more. More style, more options, more flexibility, and more for their money. And they're finally getting it from Sophie's Station, Fairbanks' newest, most attractive contemporary living complex. Sophie's Station is a prestigious addition to our community, designed for optimum quality, comfort, and convenience. For adult living at its best, see the new 1- and 2-bedroom units, now available at Sophie's Station.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by Interior Signs, long established as one of the interior's most professional, most dependable year-round sign makers. They're licensed, insured, and always ready to serve Fairbanks with signs of every kind. Signs for business, contracting, or creative design. So for signs that stand the test of time, call Interior Signs at 479-3859. That's 479-3859. Interior Signs at 2405 South Cushman.
Well, I thank all of our sponsors that pay for our to produce Meet a Pioneer, Interior Signs, Sophie Station, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Riverboat Discovery, the Binkley Family, Two Rivers Lodge, Larson's Jewelers, the Forget-Me-Not.
Riverboat Discovery?
The Riverboat Discovery.
No, not the Riverboat. I was thinking of that other place down there.
Oh, well, the Binkley.
Hotel.
Oh, no, the Binkley Family, Jim Binkley. He's going to be
Binkley,
on one of these days.
I know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you do.
I've taken that script a couple times. I like that.
Well, you know what? Because we had a problem, unfortunately, my transportation I'd arranged for you got to you late. We lost about 20 minutes of interview, and so we're out of time.
Uh-huh.
And we just got started. So I'm afraid what we're going to have to do is leave you out there.
Until next week.
Well, you were out there a week anyway, so maybe we can. There's a lot more of the story because you actually, and at one point, did go out to the site where they were recovering the airplane and have been
awesome. I've got a few stories I could tell, too.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Well, you know what? I have an interview scheduled for next week with Mr. Woody Johansson, and I think he's listening right now. And, Woody, I'm going to call you and ask if maybe...
Who, next week?
Woody Johansson.
Woody?
Yeah.
Woody, yeah, I know his son.
Well, I think what I might do is ask Woody if he might want to move 1 week, and then maybe you could come again next week, and we could just continue this conversation.
Well, whatever you want, just let me know.
Will you be able to make it next week?
Oh, yeah, any old time. Tomorrow, even.
We're talking with Jim Hutchison, Sr. This is Hutch, folks, by the way, for any of you who are new in the area, that the Hutchison Career Center is named after. And there are, as you say, Hutch, a lot more stories to tell. And next week, you're going to sing for me. Hutch used to sing at weddings and funerals and at the church and Easter, and he even sang at the old Empress Hotel, or theater, for Don Adler, right?
Who?
Don Adler?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sang with Don a lot. Empress Theater. Did you ever look at that paperwork about singing on KFAR?
Let me find it. Hold on. Hutchison, excuse me, is looking over the original Daily News Miner, I believe, from 1939 when KFAR went on the radio, and I discovered yesterday that Jim sang on KFAR the very first day of broadcast. Do you see the article about yourself yet? Do you see your article yet?
Not yet. I'm getting there.
Next week we're going to have him sing for us. 35 years later. Thank you, Hutch. Be sure to stay tuned next week for Meet a Pioneer. We join ABC Information News in progress.
Produced, but will serve to test new aerospace technologies. Union Carbide Chairman Warren Anderson says his company...